This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Selling Subprime.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. The Swiss bank UBS is selling some of its subprime mortgages to American investment firm BlackRock. The multi-billion dollar deal has been hailed as a sign the credit crisis may be easing. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
BlackRock is paying UBS $15 billion for the package of subprime mortgages. That's a hefty 25% discount to the face value. UBS, therefore, is taking a $5 billion hit. Nevertheless, the deal will be a big relief. Switzerland's largest bank has been hammered by the credit crunch. So far, it's written off over $37 billion. Today's deal with BlackRock offers a glimmer of hope. The worst may be over. Haig Simonian of the Financial Times says mortgage-backed securities are now beginning to sell.
Life is returning to the markets, and at least some purchasers are emerging from the woodwork, and some people who want to sell are obtaining now marginally better than fire sale prices.
But UBS continues to suffer. The bank today unveiled another $11 billion loss for the first quarter and said that a further 5,500 jobs will go. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We should start counting how many times we tell you this in any given week. Oil set a new record high today. This time, prices are close to $121 a barrel. Supply disruptions are still a problem. Also, demand in places like India and China seems to be making up for the downturn in the U.S. The cost of gasoline is one factor for decreasing auto sales, especially SUVs. But what if you could cap fuel prices at $2.99 a gallon for 3 years? That's what Chrysler's new incentive program is all about. It covers only the first 12,000 miles driven based on estimated mileage for the car or truck that's purchased. Chrysler hopes the offer brings people to its car lots. The automaker has seen sales drop nearly 18% this year. The Dow fell 88 points yesterday to 12,969. The Nasdaq dropped 12 points, while the S&P 500 lost 6. Asian markets were mixed. Tokyo is still closed for a holiday. Shares in Europe are edging lower. Investors will find out later today whether the Magic Kingdom still has that sparkle. Walt Disney unveils quarterly earnings today and will share its performance expectations for the rest of the year. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
With gas close to $4 a gallon, a lot of summer vacations will probably be spent on the couch. That wouldn't be too bad for Disney. The biggest part of its revenue comes from ads on its TV networks. Its Achilles heel, though, may be the Magic Kingdom. Disney theme parks and cruise lines have suffered in prior recessions. But analyst Nicole Black at Wachovia expects the company will tough it out and even see profits increase.
They're very well diversified across things like movies, cable channels, network channels, resorts. They have a very large consumer products business.
One of Disney's best-known brands had a scare last week. Hannah Montana's 15-year-old star turned up in a racy magazine spread. Dade Hayes is Variety's New York bureau chief. He says Disney's contained the damage.
To me, it doesn't seem like a Lindsay Lohan meltdown.
Too bad Disney hasn't been able to contain high gas prices and consumer confidence. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Missing a loan payment can get you in trouble, especially if the loan is for more than $1 billion. That's what happened to casino operator Tropicana. Tropicana Entertainment filed for Chapter 11 protection yesterday.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Advanta. Advanta salutes small business, the brave ones, the risk takers, all those who chase a dream and make their own way. By Clarkson Potter's The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat, available now. And by America's Family Physicians, offering patient-centered care so employees can better manage their health and employers better manage their costs. AAFP.org/value.
Demand is healthy for locally grown food at farmers markets and in restaurants. Of course, a restaurant kitchen that serves 75 meals a night isn't the same as an institutional kitchen that serves 10,000. From WHYY in Philadelphia, Peter Crimmins tells us economies of scale are keeping the local food movement small.
John Cipollini is in charge of every meal served at the University of Pennsylvania. And to celebrate Penn's commitment to locally grown food, he planned a special dinner for 700 with items from nearby farms.
Asparagus was going to be one of the featured items, and delivery day came around, and we had had a cold snap, and lo and behold, no asparagus.
Instead, he told 700 customers to have more salad. That's embarrassing. So when Cipollini feeds 10,000, most of the food comes from large distributors. Cipollini can't risk his food supply on the vagaries of local farming.
We could probably single-handedly wipe out the free-range chicken population of Pennsylvania if we decided to buy nothing but very quickly, probably within a couple of days.
Local produce also tends to be pricier. Glenn Brendel grows peppers and tomatoes and herbs on a few dozen acres in Lancaster County. Recently, he said he visited a huge asparagus farm in Mexico.
When you have 1,000 acres of asparagus and somebody calls up and wants a ton and a half, even if you only make a penny a pound on it, you know, you're still making a reasonable amount of money. If I have a little patch, say, quarter of an acre of asparagus, and I have to sell it for a penny a pound, it doesn't pay me to go down there and pick it.
A Philadelphia nonprofit called the Farm to Institution Project is trying to bridge the gap between farmers and institutional kitchens. Its director, Lindsay Gilmore, said one way is to ask the institutions to tailor their demand to what farmers can supply and vice versa.
What we decided to do was develop a limited list of products that we would get an understanding of the volume that institutions need and then an understanding of the volume that the farmers could potentially supply and build the supply of those products.
In order for a relationship like that to work, it requires something you don't often see in the open market, loyalty. In Philadelphia, I'm Peter Crimmins for Marketplace.
Starting tomorrow, Marketplace Morning Report takes a look at the global food crisis. Be sure to listen for our special series, Food Fight. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski.
American Public Media.